Well, it's my great pleasure today to have in the studio Brigadier General Lori Hummel, who has just finished up about 6 months, is it, in your position?
My six-month anniversary was August 5th.
August 5th. Well, welcome to our studio. You have come out to Palmer, and you've spoken recently at a dinner, and we appreciate the opportunity to sort of extend a little bit of what you had spoken about at that dinner. And maybe we could start by saying you've come into the position, and describe that position, because maybe listeners are not really fully aware of what that means.
I am the commissioner of the Department of Military and Veterans Affairs for the state of Alaska, and also dual-hatted as the adjutant general of the Alaska National Guard. The Department of Military and Veterans Affairs includes the Alaska Army and Air National Guard, and we also have the Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management and the Office of Veterans Administration, whereby we service 73,000 plus veterans across the state of Alaska and their families. And we run the Alaska Military Youth Academy, which is a National Guard challenge program. And we also have the Alaska Naval Militia, and the Alaska State Defense Force is also part of DMVA.
We could probably spend an entire session on any one of those, but we won't.
There's a lot going on in our department, for sure.
And I think for the listener who has heard more recently, particularly over the last few years, about the National Guard and issues associated with allegations of a variety of different kinds, that this is this may be revealing that the National Guard is not just, although that is an important role, an organization that's called up and deployed or is brought into play when there's a disaster in the state of Alaska.
Right. So the National Guard, on a day-to-day basis, works in U.S. Code Title 32 status, which means our commander-in-chief is Governor Bill Walker. And when called up in our role as the Federal Ready Reserve, then we are able to move into Title 10 status for deployment. And in that case, we work for Commander-in-Chief Barack Obama. So the National Guard, there are 54 National Guards, by the way. So every state has a National Guard force. The District of Columbia, the U.S. Virgin Islands, Guam, and Puerto Rico.
Oh.
And every National Guard serves two commanders-in-chief, although never concurrently.
Right.
And so it's a very unique and flexible component of our armed forces. National Guards are comprised of both Army and Air forces. And some states have naval militia, which is somewhat analogous to a naval National Guard, although they're in a reserve component status. So it's very complex and really very different, very differently focused than the active component force, which, of course, is what I grew up in.
Right. Just for the listener who's not familiar with how you got to be where you are today, you, I understand, were in the active military for many years.
Right. So I commissioned as an Army military intelligence officer in 1982 and served for 30 years on active duty, and retired from active duty, whereupon my husband and I came back to Alaska, where we always knew that we wanted to land after our family service was over, and did not have any aspiration to continue my service, although I loved my time in the Army, but really didn't think that it was going to be possible to put my uniform on again. And so my husband always used to say, "Why do you still have your uniforms in the closet?"
Oh.
And I couldn't really answer the question other than I was born in an Army hospital and grew up in a military family. I was an Army brat, and then at 17 went to the military academy at West Point, and then from there right into the Army. So the Army is what I've done my whole life. So maybe that's why I didn't throw those uniforms away. But I guess the real reason was because I was going to have the opportunity to put them on again.
And as you have described things, and the fact that you're wearing two hats now, sometimes you wear a uniform?
Yeah, some days I wear a uniform as the adjutant general, and some days I wear a business suit as the commissioner. And some days I change clothes a couple of times because it just depends on what I'm doing. And am I representing the Guard in that moment, or am I representing the state side of Military and Veterans Affairs?
You must have a task keeping that all straight. How do you do that?
In reality, I'm always the commissioner and I'm always the adjutant general. And so I feel that there's no discord there for me, and that these are very complementary sorts of efforts. And I have National Guardsmen, who we call that the uniformed side of our department.
Right.
And then there are also a large number of state employees who work in the other divisions as well.
Okay. Now, having had some familiarity with the Guard, I know that the Guard very often has part-time people who train part-time and have civilian occupations, and then they either on a weekend or when called up, they become full-time.
Yeah, that's right. Well, that's the strength of the National Guard. You know, they're truly citizen soldiers. And as an Army officer who had only experienced the active component, I didn't truly appreciate what the Guard brought to our total force until I was deployed into Afghanistan. And my hobby after dinner was to sit with a mug of coffee and see who sat down in the chow hall across the table from me and just chat them up and ask them about their life. And I was shocked by the large number of reservists and National Guardsmen who had been called up and deployed. And what I found after talking to them and getting to really understand them is the tremendous breadth of skill and experience that they brought to their positions. So I might be talking to an intelligence analyst who is a high school teacher in his regular civilian career, or a dentist who had become a chaplain, you know. And so everybody brings this wealth of knowledge and this diversity of experience that, frankly, I think outstripped the diversity that our active component forces brought. There was a tremendous strength and value that I didn't fully comprehend until I started to know the guardsmen and the reservists who supported our country in Operation Iraqi Freedom and Enduring Freedom in Afghanistan.
Now, in the past, National Guards men and women from Alaska have been in the Middle East, have been in Afghanistan and Iraq. What is the present situation?
Well, I'll tell you, we have people deployed today.
Okay.
We have in the last year had people deployed to Mongolia, in Kosovo, in Afghanistan, in Djibouti, in other places around the world in support of the federal mission.
Okay. I think listeners, I'm going to guess listeners would be surprised at that, that wide range of deployment continues on.
Yes, and I can also tell everyone that every day our soldiers and airmen are involved in federal Title X missions. So a lot of people, for example, they read about search and rescue operations that the National Guard undertakes, and the Guardian Angels, who are the pararescue jumpers. But those forces actually exist to support the active component airmen, the fighter jets. And so that's, they are able to support Alaskans kind of as a secondary mission to our everyday support of active component forces. Up in Eielson, we have the 168th Air Refueling Wing, and they are the big tankers in the sky, and they are the only airborne refueling capability in the state of Alaska. And so our active component forces, every single day during their operations, they depend on Alaska National Guardsmen.
Well, you've provided, I think, a comprehensive look at what the Guard is about and the incredible variety of tasks it faces. You have, interestingly enough, come into your position at a time when there's been more attention paid on the Guard than in years past. And without necessarily going through all of the detail, you've been there. Many people have suggested that both the governor's commitment to a review and improvement of certain of the things associated with the Guard is going to fall on you to accomplish. How's that going?
Well, you're right. I came into my position at a time of great turmoil and trouble in the Alaska National Guard. And it didn't start, you know, February 4th, 2015. It had been ongoing for a number of years. There was some malfeasance in the force. There were people who had breached decorum and discipline. People who were perhaps not ethical and did not uphold the standards. And unfortunately, in some cases, these bad actors went unchecked. Mm-hmm. And so I have welcomed the investigations, the inquiries, the introspection, and every attempt that we have made to ask ourselves, how did this happen? How did this come to be? And how can we make sure that this never happens again? The Judge Collins report, thankfully, didn't tell us anything that we didn't already know had gone on. And so that was welcome. There was a second Office of Complex Investigation that occurred in one of our units that took place earlier this summer in the spring. And I was happy that that also didn't bring any new unwelcome surprises. But the reality was that that we had to reboot the organization and we had to get back to basics and establish processes that bring accountability and transparency. And those processes have to be based on doctrine and regulation and law, and they have to apply across the board equitably to every airman and every soldier. And culture has to change, and that's very difficult, and especially when if certain things have been going on for a very long period of time, people forget what right looks like, mm-hmm. or maybe they've been brought up in a culture such that, you know, they don't really know. And so we are, first of all, putting those processes into place, making sure that we have a new Alaska Code of Military Justice that will allow leadership to grow the good order and discipline that we need. And we need to make sure that our organization becomes the type of organization that is worthy of its membership. And simultaneously, we need to ensure that every one of our members is worthy of the organization.
Okay. Another topic that has been the focus of much attention has to do with the availability of services for veterans in the state of Alaska. Mm-hmm. How is your office connected with that?
So our office serves our 73,000 veterans by reaching out, first of all, and communicating and helping veterans and their families negotiate the labyrinth federal systems. Mm-hmm. We help them understand what they qualify for, what's available to them, how to find it. We link people up sometimes by talking with the VA, and we talk to the veterans jobs programs. We hold job fairs. And we basically are a conduit to make sure that veterans understand their entitlements that they have earned. And also there are certain state entitlements as well. And so we make sure that veterans understand how to apply for them. We help veterans apply for them. And we also receive grievances, you know, and help to clear up miscommunications. And it's a very small group of people led very ably by Verdi Bowen, and they do tremendous work. And Verdi travels more than I do. They are out all across the state. They have veteran stand downs. They link up veterans who maybe don't have health care or are in need of other kinds of assistance, and they make that happen in rural communities.
Okay. How would you view, now that you've had a lot of experience in a variety of different positions, both in the regular military and in the National Guard, for someone, a young woman, for example, who was interested in the military, Guard a good place?
Oh, absolutely. Wow. You know, all of our military components are, I feel, are places where you are limited only by your drive and your self-discipline and your thirst to achieve. The military is a place that welcomes young people who want to learn and who want to achieve and who want to serve. And so I've always found it to be a very nurturing sort of environment, in that there are senior leaders and there's a chain of command and non-commissioned officers who are solely focused on helping young soldiers and airmen succeed. So it's a great place to learn a skill, to learn a trade. There are tremendous educational benefits and the opportunity to serve with high-quality people toward a common goal. So anybody who enjoys being part of a team and who wants to be part of an environment that is very achievement and goal-oriented, I would say come challenge yourself and join the Alaska National Guard.
Mike Malevsky here with Brigadier General Lori Hummel. And we've been talking about the National Guard here in Alaska. Before we finish up, we have a minute or two. Is there any last thing you would like to share with listeners?
I would like to say, don't take my word for it on any of this. Stop a National Guardsman, stop a soldier, an airman in uniform, and ask them about what they do. Ask them why they do it. Ask them about their leadership and how they feel about their organization when they go to work every day. And I would say, call us. Call us at the Alaska National Guard. Come out to the armory. I'll come to the gate and get you and bring you in and introduce you to some of the finest Alaskans. And those are Alaskans who choose to serve their fellow Alaskans and their fellow Americans in the cloth of our nation. No better people exist.
Okay. Well, thank you again for coming in and sharing the story about the National Guard.
My pleasure.